Good day and welcome to today's The Opioid Addiction Crisis, a Community's Effective Response Call. Please note that today's call is being recorded, and at this time I would like to turn the call over to Rebecca Chicky. Please go ahead.
Operator, thank you very much, and welcome everyone to a wonderful webinar today. This is part of AHA's Executive Dialogue Series on how our hospitals and healthcare systems are impacting the opiate or opioid crisis. Today, I have the honor of quickly introducing a group of seasoned and passionate healthcare and community leaders who are going to share with you how their community's response has been so effective both in the past and as this initiative evolves in the future in addressing the addiction crisis. Today, we will kick off hearing from Mark H. Merrill. He is the president and CEO of Valley Health System. He's joined by Dr. Nicholas Restrepo, who is vice president of medical affairs of Winchester Medical Center in Winchester, Virginia. Joining these two hospital leaders is Kevin Sansabacher, who is the chief of the Winchester Police Department, Lauren Cummings, who's the executive director of the Northern Shenandoah Valley Substance Abuse Coalition, as well as Tim Coyne, who is the public defender in Winchester, Virginia. Before I hand off the webinar to this wonderful group of speakers, a couple of logistics. One, if you are dialing in today only by phone and we're not able to access this by the internet, please know that there will be the availability and capability for you to be able to ask questions at the end of the presentation by your phone only. For those of you who are online, I encourage you, as questions pop into your mind, please use the online Q&A question submission feature that is there in front of you on your screen. Finally, if any of you are having difficulty accessing the PowerPoint materials, they are available online at www.aha.org/psych, that's P-S-Y-C-H. You can go there, click on the name of today's webinar, and it will take you to the homepage for this webinar where you can download the PowerPoint or just open it online and follow along as we go. With that, I would love to turn the call and the webinar over to Mr. Mark H. Merrill, President and CEO of Valley Health System in Winchester, Virginia.
Thank you, Rebecca, and I'd like to thank the American Hospital Association for sponsoring this very important webinar, which is having quite an impact on our community and across the United States. There's no doubt that the United States is experiencing a national opioid addiction epidemic, but now we're facing an addiction overdose epidemic, with deaths from opioid and heroin abuse surpassing traffic accidents, which is actually remarkable from my standpoint. That's true across the United States, and it's true in Virginia, that we had more deaths from overdoses last year than we did from accidents. 47,000 deaths last year in 2014, of which 40% related to opioid and 22% to heroin. So over 60% of overdoses are due to those two particular drugs. Although the health crisis has become into reality most recently in the last 2 to 3 years as deaths have increased, it's not a surprise that we can go back and look at what has been the trend that is driving this. For over a decade, we've seen an increase in sales of prescription medications, substance abuse treatment admissions, and overdose death rates. Sales of prescription drugs in the United States have more than quadrupled since 1999. That's under 20 years. So if you put that in perspective, in 2012, there were 259 million prescriptions ordered in the United States, more than one for every adult living in the United States. So again, the United States, although we represent 5% of the U.S. population, we account for almost 100% of the world's use of hydrocodone and more than 80% of the world's use of OxyContin. So what does this mean for our communities and for our colleagues and our family members? This is a region that we serve here in the Northern Shenandoah Valley. There are no roadways here, but we are very close to what's called the Heroin Highway, which is Interstate 70 from Baltimore West, and we are a large distribution center. We're a distribution center for goods and services, but unfortunately, we are also now a distribution center for heroin and other drugs. According to the CDC, 46 people die daily from a prescription overdose. And we can look back into our history here and see that the pattern began to emerge a decade ago. We saw an increase in admissions to our emergency department, an increase in treatments, an increase in our substance abuse, and also an increase in the number of babies born who are suffering from substance abuse as well. So although this is a very formidable challenge, I'm very proud of what the organization here has done, working in partnership with our community partners to begin to respond to this crisis. And we believe that there is a path forward that can have an impact. Some of these include a national prescription database, removal of pain management questionnaires from the HCAHPS surveys, funding for non-traditional pain management, and removing barriers for Medicaid individuals who are having difficulty, especially following incarceration. So we believe it needs to be a combination of treatment, prevention, and enforcement. Our region, as I mentioned, has had a significant increase over the last decade. Our hospital, Winchester Medical Center, has had a threefold increase in the number of substance abuse babies since 2010. So I'm sure many of you on the call are seeing the same thing across your communities. So our presenters today are very passionate and committed to their effort to have a positive effect on this crisis. We believe that we'll continue to take a combination of local, state, and national efforts to include enforcement, prevention, treatment, and reentry into society for these people who have been convicted or who are suffering from substance abuse. So again, thanks to the American Hospital Association for sponsoring this. It's now my pleasure to turn it over to Dr. Nicholas Restrepo.
Thanks, Mark. As mentioned, my name is Nick Restrepo. I'm the Vice President of Medical Affairs in Winchester, and we're going to spend the next hour or so sharing with you our story here in the Northern Shenandoah Valley with regards to the opioid addiction crisis. Just for logistical purposes, as you'll note, there's 60-some-odd slides in your packet. The first 40 are what we're going to talk about, and the additional are there for information and for your use at a later time, including our contact information. As far as today's talk, our primary objectives are stated on the slide, but what we want to do is essentially share a story about how healthcare systems and community partners can come together and create sustainable solutions to address this public health crisis that we're facing. We'll provide an overview of our problem here in the Valley, share with you how our coalition came to be, describe the key roles of the system representatives that constitute our coalition, and share some of the basic principles of the strategic plan that we've put in place. And we'll also share some of the strategies around sustainability. We recognize we're early in this effort, but we've accomplished a fair amount in the past couple of years that we're more than happy to share as we move forward. Next, Tim Coyne is going to join us here and continue with our presentation.
Thank you, Nick. My name is Tim Coyne. I'm the public defender for the city of Winchester and the five surrounding counties that are encompassed in Valley Health's catchment area, essentially, in Virginia. It's a population of around 230,000 people out in rural Virginia. The story we want to share today is really one of collaboration, how different parts of the system have been affected by this crisis and really managed to come together. I think it's somewhat unique when the public defender, the chief of police, representative of the hospital system can sit together along with representatives from our court system, prosecutors, child welfare, our departments of social services, city, county, local governments, to come together to really try to address this crisis that has affected us. And what we realized early on is that there was a commonality between what we were all experiencing. Kevin's department, his chief of police, was arresting people that I was then representing in court that were also being treated in the hospital system. And we realized we had to step outside of our traditional roles and try to come together to cross those boundaries and come out of our own silos to address the problem. It started, from our perspective, really with law enforcement, coming forward back in 2013 and early 2014 and publicly coming forward and saying we cannot arrest our way out of this problem. And we're seeing a real uptick in heroin arrests, and that was soon followed by an increase in overdose deaths and injuries in our community. And law enforcement, led by Chief Sanzenbacher primarily, and members of our local drug task force, really challenged the community to step forward and come up with some solutions to how to address it. As I mentioned, the deaths were really what started us on this path. And as you can see from this next slide, This shows from 2011 up through 2016 the increase that we've experienced. Again, these numbers may not compare to some larger urban areas like Baltimore or Washington, D.C., but again, we're a population center of about 230,000 people. And in 2012, we had one death that was attributed to opioids or heroin. And that number jumped to 21 the following year in 2013. And that's what really got law enforcement's attention and really started us on the process. In 2014, we had 33 deaths that were attributable to opioids and heroin. Small decrease last year to 30. And at this point this year, we're at 21 deaths as of the end of September. But I can tell you just last week, we had 8 overdoses that were non-fatal in the early part of last week that required, again, police response, emergency medical response, hospital admissions, et cetera. And again, we're not unlike many other communities, but this is what really triggered our response.
Okay. At the medical center, we're seeing increasingly complicated cases and challenges around substance use disorder and in particular opiate and heroin cases that were presenting to our facility. We had a process of an initial, like many other organizations, I'm sure many of your organizations, with a daily safety call. And during that safety call, I, as a urologist who had been here for 15 years and thought I had a pretty good understanding of the organization and the community, came to see pretty quickly that I lacked as much understanding as I thought I had, especially around the use of substances in our community. The impact it was having on our staff, our patients, their loved ones, was on every single call on a daily basis. We saw, since 2010, a 5- to 10-fold increase at each of our emergency rooms, each of our 6 emergency rooms. The data you're seeing here is the Winchester Medical Center's data for emergency room and inpatient presentations around opioid and heroin cases. But over that same time period, all 6 of our ERs were seeing the same sorts of increases. Depending upon which ER you're talking about, it was 5- to 10-fold increase in the frequency of these cases. Likewise, we were seeing the adverse impact on the children born with neonatal substance exposure. This graph represents our data between 2012 and May of this year. Each year is shown on the graph representation there, with the numbers being the number of children in each one of these categories. So a total of 9,838 newborn nursery children without a history of any exposure. And you can see their length of stay, which is the number in white, of 1.6, versus, for instance, to the far right of the graph, a length of stay of 34.8 days. The cost associated with the care of each of these children. And what we saw was for the children that had neonatal substance exposure, and we see an increasing polypharmacy as well, the obvious impact was significant on them and their families and on the healthcare system and the community which we serve. Over time, we shared a fair amount of data. And as the next slide comes up, I believe, well, the next slide will show you some of the data we showed with the, shared with the community in order to create a community burning platform around the issues that we were facing. We saw an increase in opioid-related deaths and injuries in the community, as mentioned, and we shared this data throughout, and you'll see more about that. Adverse impact on the substance-exposed children. We saw increase in arrests attributable to substance use disorders, increase in children in foster care, drug-related child protective service-related referrals, and a very costly model of care showing that our detention center was one of the places where care was being delivered, so to speak, and the cost model around that was not benefiting anybody. Data surrounding that is in the additional slides that I mentioned earlier in the presentation. So together, our community responded, and responded in the way that we're going to describe and how we kind of coalesced our efforts. Specific to Valley Health and to our partners on the phone from the healthcare community, Valley Health set up a substance abuse task force. I was privileged to co-chair that, and we worked together and tried to work in tandem with the community efforts as the community was coalescing around various initiatives to tackle this challenge. A very key point was that we had unwavering support from our CEO, from our board of trustees, and from our medical staff leadership as we had looked to face these issues together with our community partners. We became the champions of this being a disease in the community rather than looking at it from a judicial standpoint or a moral failing. We also partnered with a variety of different other community organizations. We had a community service board that had not been as present as one would have liked. Through this and other work, we were able to create partnerships with them and develop some areas where together we could intervene. And one area that has been particularly beneficial has been we hired together a master's level counselor who works with our prenatal and postpartum patients with substance use disorder. So the moms all are screened at their initial OB appointment, and if they screen positive, they're offered a referral to a substance abuse counselor, master levels trained substance abuse counselor, for evaluation and referral into a proper treatment program. And that has been an excellent program that we've partnered with the Northwest Community Services Board. And we also spent a fair amount of time educating ourselves and implementing a educational program within our own organization to make sure that we all had a common understanding. The name of that campaign was the Breaking the Codes of Silence campaign. And some of the topics that we did on a monthly basis with our employees in brown bag lunch type of presentations are listed there. And what we were trying to do is increase awareness around substance use disorder, realizing that we are our community and there'll be impaired providers and coworkers. How do we identify them? How do we get them into treatment? How do we support them as they struggle with the outcome or the effects of this disease? A fair amount of work done around medication safety and proper prescriptive management, both in terms of what is a proper prescription for pain management and also educating patients on the proper use and disposal of medications. We did this with community partners and gave an excellent presentation in terms of my loved one's been incarcerated, now what? And we looked at various issues with bringing in community members, people in recovery, and pain management. And this was a well-attended event each month for us, and I think moved us forward as an organization quite well. In terms of Valley Health's contributions over the past couple of years to this, we've developed a good working relationship with a lot of community partners, and we've had a healthcare systems like us, and I'm sure your healthcare system are no different, have tremendous expert resources and volunteer work around this. So we have had various initiatives where in the early phases of developing things, a lot of things were done by people at Valley Health with a passion around this topic, and oftentimes in their own time or carving out a little bit of time with their work environment. We have been always able to provide meeting space. We've helped tremendously with incidental costs as things need to be done, published, printed, advertisements, et cetera, through marketing and our website, which you'll see later in the presentation. We developed some PSAs in terms of public service announcements that were well-received and helpful to the community. And we've also worked aggressively in terms of engaging and collaborating with various stakeholders to create public awareness around the issue. For the next few slides, Kevin Sansenbacher, the chief of Winchester City Police, will be carrying on from here.
Hi, good afternoon. It's Kevin Sansenbacher. Yes, as Tim and Nick said, our region is served by a drug task force, which is made up of the local chiefs and sheriffs in the area. And we were one of the early identifiers of this problem in our region. After 2012, we were getting reports back from the field of increased number of heroin-related deaths. And we were fortunate that we were in agreement that it was not something we could arrest our way out of, and cannot continue to use traditional methods of, incarceration, prosecution, arrest in order to solve this problem. So we formulated several community seminars. We invited members of the healthcare community, the treatment community, law enforcement, criminal justice, lawyers, and prosecutors to attend these seminars that we provided just to kind of talk about the issue. And we divided those first two groups by profession for our discussions about what we could do about that. When we continued to see the deaths, we called for a third summit, which occurred in April of 2014 at our local university here in the city. But that group we divided up by region, with all the providers from each region meeting together in the room to kind of brainstorm what issues we should be addressing. And from that, we decided, okay, we need to move forward. So we called for the participants at that seminar to literally put their cards on the table if they were willing to help us. And we would reconvene in some fashion in the future to move forward with that. And we got a very positive response. When that meeting was finishing up, you know, I got busy and turned around, and I was the only one left in the table when all the cards were there, so that was how I was elected to what was started out as the Heroin Action Committee. But we did proceed from there, and we've morphed now as we've recognized it's more of a heroin issue. You know, it is not only heroin, but it's opioids. And it's really, you know, we're looking beyond those issues to the overall issue of addiction in our community, because we know from history, you know, other drugs will eventually surface as problematic as we move from heroin and opioids to other things, because that's what's happened in history. From that group, we continued to meet, and this slide depicts some of the actions that came out of that first group. I'm just going to briefly touch on some of the things I think went very well, and you can just read the rest for yourself. One of the things I think really went well was the hospital, and we've had a fantastic partnership with them. I can't highlight enough the importance of that partnership. Implemented a system-wide program to ensure proper prescriptive practices in all Valley Health hospital emergency departments and urgent care centers. You know, where from my personal experience, somebody was coming in for inpatient surgery, they might get a prescription for 60 opioid-based drugs when they left. And I think those practices have changed so that they're just being prescribed the minimum, and that certainly has been a huge help. Other things we found to be very effective is continuing our partnerships. One of the things we did in July of 2014 is we reached out to the Casey Family Programs through a contact we had with one of our local judges. And we used them to bring in subject matter expertise on how to not only develop the community, but really the resources that were available to us that we were not able to identify. And we also did some community outreach on substance abuse and addiction initiatives, including looking at some best practices that were going on throughout the country. And we're waiting for the next slide here. But, you know, moving forward, in September of 2014, Valley Health sponsored an educational forum for over 200 local medical providers, featuring presentations from local law enforcement, the DEA, and others about the opioid and heroin crisis in our community. That was another thing, from my personal observation, that went really well. You could almost see the lights going off in some of the physicians' eyes as they were hearing our presentation about forged prescriptions and prescription shopping. And one physician actually raised her hand and said, you know, I've had a patient that's been coming into me for a period of time. They have three other physicians. They're also prescribing to them all countervening drugs. And I had no idea what they were doing until just this minute. And it was also helpful to us to hear the pressures that are on the medical community, because we were blaming them for over-prescribing, and they were able to explain to us the system that's in place, how they are often, their compensation is determined by the number of times patients do not represent, and if they're coming back for pain medications, you know, that can impact on how the hospital is compensated in the long run. So we were able to bring that to the attention of some of our state and national representatives to talk about those compensation issues. So that was very helpful to us in doing that. And again, continuing through October and November of 2014, another thing that was very helpful was through CVS, we were able to identify a drug take-back box program that they had through a grant that they offered to local jurisdictions. We were able to obtain a red drug take-back box that went out in front of one of our stations, and we encouraged people to bring back drugs that they had in their cabinets that they were no longer able to use or had expired, and deposit them in those drug take-back boxes. That was very effective. When we first started, we were finding about 40 to 50 pounds of drugs being placed in that receptacle every week. That was something we just thought was going to have a bounce upon initial implementation and diminish over a period of time. That has not been the case. We are still taking about 30 or 40 pounds of drugs into that box every week, having to dispose of them. So I think it shows the tremendous demand that's out there in the community. And that's another thing we found to be extremely effective as we've moved forward. We've also done some partnering to advertise areas, such things as our local community law enforcement and narcotics group together called CLEAN. Also started a program called RX123 that they worked through Valley Health with. And the RX123, you get a little tag every time you go to certain pharmacies with a prescription. And the one stands for, first of all, take your prescriptions as prescribed. Two was you know, when you have them in your house, make sure that they're secure, that they're locked up, they're not available to children, teens, other people that may want to steal those. And third, once you're done with them, dispose of them properly. And again, that's circled back to our drug take back box. Finally, after all these various seminars, we decided we really needed to again rethink what we were doing, to find some way of really focusing our activity. And so we called for a community leadership summit, which occurred here at Valley Health on November 18, 2014. And prior to doing that in our group think, we decided we really needed support from our local jurisdictions as well as the hospital. And we figured the best way of doing that was look at the missions and vision statements that they have within each organization, and that's what's up on the your presentation right now, and find some way that we can link the problems that we are seeing to the mission statements of each organization we are trying to seek help with. So, for example, the City of Winchester, mission statement there is to provide a safe, vibrant, sustainable community while striving to constantly improve the quality of life of our citizens. So when we were reaching out to these jurisdictions, we were able to demonstrate to them at this seminar through the statistics that you have in the back of your package, the issues that we are faced, the number of deaths, the number of children going into foster care, the costs associated with hospital with newborn children being exposed to these drugs, and link it to the expenses that they are incurring in their community. Through this mission and vision statement, we found that a very effective tool to get their attention for what we were trying to do. And again, we also got the help for the seminar from the Casey Family Programs, where they brought in some experts from other communities, one in particular near Cleveland, Ohio, that had been dealing with this for a longer period than we were, and to give us some guidance into what we were able to do and what they were able to do in their particular communities and help us discover what directions we should be taking. We also presented the participants at that particular session with our new Road to Recovery website. This was one of the things we developed over the prior 5 or 6 months. And the Road to Recovery website is really a resource center for people that are having issues with either themselves or their family members or friends or other people in the community that need help. We did not have any resources prior to this that we could refer people to. And so on our website, there are a number of different items that are available to the community for people seeking help with these particular issues. And so at this seminar in November, we introduced that as well. We also decided that, we really needed to adopt some goals coming out of that seminar. So at that particular instance, we adopted what we consider to be our desired future state. And that is by January 1st of 2017, which is getting surprisingly close for us here. We really want to first of all, decrease the number of mortality from overdoses. And if you look to our first slide, you can see we have not exactly been successful in that. I think we've had 21 to date so far this year. Last year at this time, we had 17. So we still have much work to do. We're hoping to decrease the incidence of substance-exposed infants, a tremendous cost to our community when that occurs. We're also hoping to decrease the incidence of children needing social services. If you look at one of our graphs in the back, you can see it's almost a direct correlation between the number of opioid-related incidents that we've had and the number of children we're seeing going into foster care. And, of course, there's a tremendous cost associated with that. And we're also hoping, of course, to decrease the incidence of criminal attributes attributable to addiction.
So in order to meet these goals for our desired future state that we set at the summit, we'd also spend some time over the summer of 2014 leading up to the summit. A group from our then heroin committee, which became the Addiction Action Committee, got together on a monthly basis. We researched what other communities across the country were doing, from San Diego to Vermont to Massachusetts, Kentucky, other areas that had been experiencing similar problems over the years, to see what steps they had taken, what practices had they implemented over the years. And so we wanted to present the decision makers and stakeholders in our community at that summit with some real measures, real things that they could undertake if they were so willing. And so we identified for them a number of things you see listed up here in no particular order, but these are the things we came up with, starting with prevention and education programs that included things like public service announcements, social media, reaching out through social media, trying to get some curriculum and education in our schools to our young people to educate them about the dangers of opioid addiction as early as possible. We also identified the medical education programs that have been discussed, where through Valley Health's efforts, they gathered upwards of 200 physicians at a time to educate them about prescribing habits and the dangers that were being seen on the streets, et cetera. The drug take-backs have already been talked about, and those boxes that the chief mentioned have expanded since he put one outside of the Winchester Police Department. Our county sheriff's department were able to secure boxes from CVS as well as the courthouse. So we're trying to reach that out into the community to get folks to realize, to try to get rid of any medications that there aren't are no longer that aren't being used, and so they're not sitting around in medicine cabinets. We realized early on that although we had some dedicated providers in our community, we had huge gaps, particularly in the areas of accessible and sustainable treatment, but also in detox. Unfortunately, our jail has been our default detox in too many instances, and we identified that early on as a gap area of need, and we've spent the last several years trying to get with the providers and really upgrade that in the community. We looked at the prescription monitoring program, and Valley Health made great strides early on in getting their physicians in the pharmacy to access the PMP and actually check when somebody was coming in to get a prescription filled to avoid doctor and hospital shopping. Drug courts you'll see up there are nothing new. They've been in existence since the 90s, but they were new to our area. And it was an idea that required a lot of changing of mindset, but it was the one area that our localities especially really latched onto as something they wanted to get behind because it really involved not just the judicial system, but the treatment community and so many of these other actors that we were already collaborating with in an effort to address this problem. Drug courts are effective. There was a study done in Virginia in 2012 that showed that they save almost $20,000 per year per participant versus the cost of doing business as usual. And then we also realized we had to reach out to our recovery network and really utilize those folks who'd already made great strides and then years of sobriety under their belt, because we realized maybe too late or later than we should have that those folks are a valuable resource because they've been there, they've done that, and they can really reach people in the throes of addiction in a way that the rest of us can't. And so they've become a valuable resource and ally in our efforts. Okay. So after the summit, in order to keep things moving, we continued our efforts and had to take certain definitive steps, the first of which was basically getting our organization a little more organized. And in January of 2015, we officially became the Northern Shenandoah Valley Substance Abuse Coalition, wrote a charter, were able to get ourselves identified as a Virginia nonprofit corporation, and we obtained 501c3 status as a nonprofit from the IRS. So that really gave us some structure and some form that allowed us, as we went out into the community and trying to reach out to local governments, whoever else, that we were now an organization that was here to stay and that was really working together to address this problem. We met with local, state, and even federal officials from our area to try to educate them on the nature of the problem and what our specific needs were and what they could do to assist it at those various levels. Nick had mentioned the jointly funded effort between Valley Health and our local community services board on prenatal early intervention service for substance-addicted pregnant women, and you have some slides in your supplemental materials starting at 52 that really shows you the impact that this has had, that expectant mothers coming in, even for their first visit to the OB practices in our area, were drug tested, and the substances that were showing up were these moms, and that they would then be referred to a a licensed counselor, case manager, who could really help them bridge the gaps and access treatment, all for the protection of the infants.
During this same time, and heading through to September, a lot of our efforts was around building an understanding with our community and the various stakeholders regarding the crisis that we face. We hosted a variety of community forums. Some of the key points there was that we always shared a message of hope from a recovering addict whenever we could. It made it for easier work, quite frankly, to focus on recovery. It was an uplifting message, and it helped move our community forward to the hope of recovery. And was a key strategic move that we implemented. We shared our community's data with our community. They had a need to know much of the data that we're showing you, and a need to make sure that we had a common understanding as a community as we move forward. The variety of different topics that we talked about were there, and one of the key things that we also did was keep the media involved. We never said no to the media. Whenever they wanted to talk about the crisis, one of us would always say yes. We wanted to keep this crisis in the public dialogue in order to move our community forward. Our Road to Recovery website has a lot of our information on there. It has many testimonials as well. We wanted to put a face on the tragedy. We wanted people to share their stories, and we gave them the opportunity to put either community forums or through video testimonials on our website that you can see. We also emphasize the importance about the proper use and disposal of opioids to the community. Likewise, at the same period of time, we had a series of continuing medical education events. We had a total of 600 attendees at these various forums, and some of the topics are listed there. The first one was the opioids and the heroin crisis in our community, which is one that Kevin mentioned earlier. This was done in combination with our local partners, and the overwhelming majority of the presentation was done by local law enforcement, by the Virginia State Police, the DEA, and we had a robust and excellent discussion. The healthcare providers and law enforcement, and a much better understanding came from that. We also had a CME presentation around proper prescriptive practices. That was also assisted by law enforcement. And then talking about pain management, alternatives to pain management besides just narcotics, and substance use disorder, and the continuing need to educate the various stakeholders, the community, the medical community, local political leaders, was an emphasis during this period of time.
Continuing on with our timeline of initiatives, and as you can see from this, there's overlap. A lot of things were going on at the same time. We had a lot of balls up in the air. One of the things we did in May and June of 2015, in July, is visit a number of the drug courts in Virginia. We even made a visit up to Philadelphia, who has a very long-standing and robust drug court that has about 500 participants. Other drug courts here in Virginia are not nearly that size, and ours certainly isn't. We wanted to go out and see how they actually worked, what was required to bring together all the different players. So we undertook to do that. We also, as I said earlier, became incorporated as a Virginia nonprofit and actually received our 501c3 status. One of the real major accomplishments in this effort, and kind of a seminal moment, was in July of 2015 when we were able to secure funding. Significant funding from the City of Winchester, Frederick County, Clark County, and Valley Health Systems to the tune of about $60,000 each from Valley Health, the City of Winchester, Frederick County, and $15,000 from Clark County, which is a smaller community. But that was so important and critical in so many ways, not the least of which it showed the collaboration that was taking place between local government, public health, and all the different entities that we've talked about today, but they really put money on the table. And that enabled us to hire an executive director for Substance Abuse Coalition, Lauren Cummings, who's here today. It also furthered our effort to set up and establish the Drug Treatment Court. One of the primary costs of that court is treatment and trying to pay for that. And as we said earlier, our Community Services Board wasn't in a position to provide that treatment, so we had to reach out to the private providers in the community, and the coalition is actually paying for the treatment for participants in the drug court. But it was a really collaborative effort to get those funds in place. They've now been continued for renewed for a second year in a row, so we're into the second year. And with that funding, we were able to successfully apply for a Bureau of Justice Assistance grant with the local match there and in place. And that's going to provide us with $350,000 over 3 years to further the efforts of the Drug Treatment Court. And then finishing up with the timeline to bring us up to date is just a few of the other efforts you see up here. In October of 2015, again with the help of KC Family Programs, we conducted peer-to-peer recovery coach training. We probably had about 25 to 30 people from the recovery community. That training was conducted by the McShin Foundation out of Richmond, and there was a follow-up held in December, and we're trying to take that to the next step to now figure out how to best utilize those folks, either in the drug court or even having them visit people in the ER or taken into custody by the police, to figure out a way that we can use them and help people access treatment services. They said we hired our executive director, Lauren, in November. She started in January. We submitted our application to operate as a drug treatment court to the Virginia Supreme Court in March, got approval in April, and we held our first docket in mid-August. And we're now about a month and a half in with six participants, and I think I can safely say it really is making an impact on their lives. We have a lot of challenges ahead of us, but we've made some great progress in putting some of these best practices into place.
So I think we've highlighted a lot of activity we've done over the last couple of years, but we realized also that we need to come back and focus at the end of 2015, the beginning of 2016, and really make sure that we were focused, and we did that by coming back and sitting down with a strategic planning retreat with the help of our partners at Casey. As part of that retreat, we developed a mission statement. For sake of time, I'm not going to read that to you, but the main thing is, of that mission statement is the collaborative and community partners portion of it. And I think Dr. Restrepo has touched on that where, it's really unique, I think, in our community where the public defender, the chief of police, can sit down in a room with the president of the hospital, vice president of the hospital, and at times, people that are in the recovery community, a convicted felon, and all work together. So I think that's really key to our mission statement is that community collaboration. And our vision ties into that with that as well, is working together to overcome the grip of substance abuse and addiction. And we've maintained three areas of strategic focus designed around those desired future states, and those are prevention. We're really looking to how do we create a new community norm where people aren't seeking satisfaction and pain recovery and that sort of thing through drugs. We're looking to appropriate all situationally appropriate education offered to all on a long-term basis. In treatment, we're looking for a financially and geographically accessible and timely manner for treatment, especially in a state of Virginia where we are challenged because Virginia has not adopted the Affordable Care Act. So there are restrictions there, and really being client focused and trying to help those people in their recovery through a number of programs we've already described.
So in the last few minutes here before we break for questions, want to share a few lessons learned and strategies for you to consider as you move forward in your communities based on our experience. We believe an important lesson learned has been to educate and engage the community as a whole and its leaders specifically, as we mentioned, through the sharing and collecting and sharing of data. Very important to put a face on the crisis itself and to shine a light on the hope of recovery. We encourage you to, like we did, develop an educational strategy around the providers, around the elected public officials, and around your public as a whole in order to impact your community in a positive way moving forward. Again, healthcare systems can be the champions of addiction as a disease, and that this is a public health crisis. Very important that the establishment of a multidisciplinary cross-systems approach. As you've seen, hopefully, through our presentation, that's been one of our best accomplishments and one of our key components to our early success and our ongoing sustainability. We encourage people to establish realistic and long-term goals that are concrete and measurable, and to share your issue with your media whenever you can. It's important that this remains in the public dialogue. And also, one of the things that we learned, and we learned a little bit later than we wish we would have, is the importance of including the recovery and the faith-based communities in your work. It's a very important lesson learned on our part, and one that we would encourage you to make sure you are mindful of. As you look at healthcare systems and what healthcare systems can do, and this is just a sharing of some things, basically it's the sharing of time, talent, and treasure to your community and the community efforts. Also, some of the specifics in terms of the championing the disease of addiction, working to educate your providers and your community around proper use of analgesics, working with your law enforcement to champion the community drug take-back programs. We've been very active in facilitating education and community access, both to law enforcement and the general public, around naloxone, and also helping look at and work with community partners to meet the needs that are unmet in the current continuum of care in your community. In terms of sustainability, I think a very important point, and we believe a very important point, is to have a committed core group of stakeholders. We're very fortunate to have a healthcare system whose leadership is committed to this, local governments that are committed to it, and those key stakeholders, the sharing of their time and talent and their treasure, have been very important in our efforts thus far and in our maintaining this project going forward, this initiative going forward. Very important that the community sense an ownership to this. No one stakeholder should believe that they are the sole owners of this or the sole party responsible for this forward. It has to be, again, a cross-disciplinary effort, as we've emphasized. Important to look for alternative sources of funding. In Virginia, there's limited funding available for these initiatives. We've been aggressive in terms of seeking grants, and we've had success with grants. We have a mechanism for philanthropy, and that's another option in terms of whatever you can put together, and working also with community organizations to contribute what they can to the initiatives. Important not to duplicate bodies of work. By coming together throughout various disciplines, we've been able to coordinate our efforts, been able to support each other. There's no pride of ownership over any one particular initiative. Collectively, we're working as a community to improve our current community situation. We've been an important issue is to maintain an updated governmental bodies, so the quarterly updates to the local government bodies, so that they can understand where we are, because they'll continue to see the crisis. They may not see some of the work being done. It's important to be open with our sharing regarding that. And then we have a volunteer work group structure that's in the appendix area as well that has been a key part of making sure that the people closest to the problems are those doing the work and maintaining the energy and creating the initiatives as we move forward as a community. So with that, we'll let Kevin wrap things up before we move on to a Q&A session.
As Nick said, that will conclude our presentation for today. We chose this slide, if it decided to come up here. it's a slide of an iceberg, and we chose that because hopefully we've been able to demonstrate the amount of work we've put in the last several years as a group, but we believe that is only the very tip of the iceberg with what continues to need to be done. And in addition, you know, although we've had 21 deaths this year, a tremendous burden on our community, it again is only the tip of the iceberg as well, because we know for every death there are probably, you know, 100 people that are impacted, maybe several hundred people that are impacted by the disease of addiction in many different ways. So we think this slide is appropriate. And I would remind you that we do have slides beyond this highlighting some of our issues and some of the solutions we've come up with. So we thank you for your attention, and we'll take any questions.